Hello and welcome to the Going Courage podcast, where I talk to real people about real life, trying to gain some insights from their experiences building courage. Before we get started, I just want to encourage you to hit that subscribe button on YouTube. It really helps the channel grow and it helps me to bring more guests onto the podcast. You can also do the same on Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Amazon with a like and a follow. And if you're looking for links to social media channels, you can find them at www.goencourage.com. You can also grab a copy of the Courage Journal, which is a 31-day prompted journal designed to help you build courage in your life. All right, with all that said, let's bring on my next guest and let's see where the conversation goes. Hello, Courage Seekers. Today, I'm joined by business and mindset coach and public speaker, Ollie Olds. So welcome to the Going Courage podcast. Ollie, how are you doing today?
Good, mate. How are you doing, Rex?
I'm doing good. Yeah. It's a nice morning that we're connecting with each other today. Nice and fresh.
Yeah, man. Honestly, I've been for a sea dip this morning already. So I'm full of beans this morning. So I'm really pumped to be on this and, you know, we've had brief discussions before this. So I'm excited to see where this conversation goes anyway.
Yeah, me too. I didn't have a sea dip, but I had a hot shower. So
nice,
on the
mate.
Other side of the spectrum.
Well, I had a sea dip and then I come home and I was probably in the shower for about 45 minutes just to warm back up. So
yeah, nice.
You got it.
And whereabouts are you right now?
I'm in South Wales. So a little area called Puthcawl, just on the coastline in South Wales. So yeah.
Nice. All right. Yeah. And I'm just outside Heathrow. So a little bit of a, we're kind of like on the same line, but you know.
Yeah.
East and west of each other.
For sure.
Amazing. Well, I always start the podcast by asking people if they know what their name means. Do you know what your name means, Ollie?
I don't, to be honest with you.
All right. I did a bit of research. This is what I've come up with. All right. So here it is. So the golden word that came up that I think you might be interested in hearing is peace. Right.
Peace.
So Ollie coming from the word olive, which is like an olive branch. And I can't remember where the origin is from there, but in terms of like which language, but peace. So your name encompasses peace. That's one definition. And then the other definition was descendant of the ancestors.
Descendant of the ancestors, wow.
So then I was like, oh, isn't that a bit self-explanatory? Aren't we all? But
yeah.
There's actually a meaning behind that. So it's, I think it's Nordic and it comes from... descendant of the ancestors, with the ancestors being otherworldly and powerful.
Wow.
So there you go, man.
Appreciate that. And thanks for giving me that positivity this early in the morning. I love it. It's good to know where my name originates from.
Yeah. And I was thinking about it. And I was thinking, you know, peace. When we think of peace, we think like mild. We think mild-mannered. We think chill. But actually, peace comes from a position of power. You know, if you can't have peace without power, you know, and so powerful otherworldly force, by having that, like, you know, within you. I'm just projecting all this onto you.
Yeah, please, man. I love it. Bring
you,
it in.
You bring an element of peace with you as well. And I think that's fantastic.
Appreciate that. I'd like to think I bring that in life. You know, I appreciate that. That's nice. Yeah.
Well, we're going to find out, right? We're going to unpack your life here a little bit, you know. Well, not in a this is your life way, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
All right. So I introduced you as a business and mindset coach and a public speaker. Is that fair? Is that what you do?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've been doing it now since 2020. Essentially working with business owners or high achievers to bring fulfillment in all areas of their life. So a lot of these people I work with, they've created something that they thought was going to bring success, happiness to their life, and they get to the top of the building, essentially, where they thought they were going to get that fulfillment, and it doesn't quite hit for them. And we start to change that perception and build more confidence, self-esteem internally.
Mm.
So that, you know, all areas of their life are optimized. So I'm a big believer in bringing that to all areas of their life. And biggest one is be comfortable in who they are more than anything, you know. And that's where success comes everywhere then. When you're comfortable in who you are, that peace word maybe comes into this, which you just spoke about. You start to align yourself with your values and who you truly are. And it just ripple effects to every other aspect of their business. If they want to grow it, their limiting beliefs.
Mm.
So that's the biggest thing that I work with these people, you know, and bringing that to them.
Amazing. That's great. I saw a reel, I think maybe it was just last night, maybe you put something out around, you know, equating working harder and going through pain and burnout and all that kind of stuff in order to find value. Because if you've worked hard, it's like a badge of honor, isn't it? Yeah, I've done this and therefore I earned this. But actually you were saying, and I'm going to give you a chance to unpack if you want to, you were saying actually it's about knowing who you are and being yourself and bringing yourself into situations. I wonder if you could speak into that a little bit.
Yeah, awesome. I appreciate that. And I think the biggest part when I said it yesterday, when I put it up, was I think throughout my whole journey, from my background is rugby league, and my whole purpose I felt from a young age was play rugby league. Work. And, you know, every adversity, keep leaning into it. But every surgery, every setback, every battle, you know, that come with it. And sometimes the anxiety or the depression it put into my life at stages, I thought this was part of it. And I think sometimes it's knowing when you've got to stop pushing in this direction and actually like sit, reflect, and redirect, essentially. And after having so many knee reconstructions from rugby, I've always felt, oh, well, I've got to keep going. This is my calling, essentially. And after 3 knee reconstructions on my right knee, it was as if the, you know, whatever you want to talk about was like, hey, you're done here. But I just couldn't accept that. So I felt, oh, this is a sign I've got to push through this. And this is where long-term effects happen then, though. You know, burnout, loss of identity, frustration, no direction. And that journey for me has been like a massive cornerstone in learning, which I've took into my life today, and understanding like there's a difference between pushing hard for drive and pushing hard to you know, stick to your word. And then it's another level then where you're like, why am I pushing hard right now? Do I even know why I'm doing this? Or does this, I have to feel a certain feeling and that's how I feel good enough?
Yeah, so interesting, isn't it? And it's something that I guess isn't talked about enough, because we all feel like, oh, I'm the only one who's not catching up with everyone else. I have to work that much harder than so-and-so because I'm trying to get to his or her level, you know?
100%. Like, I think it's that thing, you know, that grand old saying, comparison is the thief of joy. And you can be on your own journey and there's always going to be someone ahead of you. Unfortunately, that's reality. And there's always someone behind you. But if you're constantly comparing yourself to them, you're never actually going to feel fulfilled in your own life. You're never actually going to feel content in what you've achieved, because there is massive achievements in so many areas of your life. But people are quick to forget about that, compare themselves to someone else, and they're just always feeling like they're never good enough. They always feel like they're never good enough. They're always chasing their tail. They think they've got to push harder and harder. And this just impacts your confidence, impacts your self-worth, which is the biggest thing. And then you're seeking it from other people. Or if I just do this grand gesture, if I do this thing in my work, if I go above and beyond you, I'm going to feel enough. And then it's literally a slippery slope.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because Instagram's, I know it's probably cliche to say it now, but like Instagram is like a place where you do compare your life to other people. And a lot of it is superficial. And so we think, oh, you know what? I'm more evolved than that. You know, I don't need to have the car that this person drives. But then if we take that into the more, emotional, social aspects of our life, we end up comparing ourselves to someone who's funnier or who can hold the room a little bit better or who's louder. And we start comparing ourselves on that level. So it's not even the surface level now, it's just character traits. And again, it's the same issue, isn't it? You think you have to be like someone else. Oh, I need to command the room like that, or I need to be the funniest person in the room or whatever.
Yeah, it's 100%. You know, social media can be the most amazing tool if you want it to be, or it can be the worst thing, depending on how you look at it. I think solitude really helps that, and ask yourself questions. I reflect, I remember when I was going through the midst of it years ago, feeling lost in my whole life, I started learning about Jordan Peterson. Now, whether you hate him or you love him, you've got to say that he's got some amazing reflective questions that you can listen to. And one of them was just asking yourself, you know, just before you go to bed at night, asking yourself, you know, what's one thing that I could do to improve my life, or what's one thing I could stop doing which is going to bring joy to me, or whatever you want to look at it. And if you sit with that long enough, like, your internal dialogue will tell you what it is if you're willing to listen to it. If that's your intuition or if your gut, whatever it is you want to see it as. But there is something in that. And I think, you know, as well, like if you're scrolling Instagram all the time, you actually get that level of anxiety from that. You actually feel a little bit crappy after it. And you know, if you lean into that a bit more, you know you need to stop. And, you know, that's why it's really healthy to have like social media breaks or like give yourself time scales. Or I think there's an app now, like a blocker app, which you can just put on your phone, which stops you looking at apps. Because it's a vicious cycle, because you're trying to keep with that saying, right? Trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Mm.
And you're never actually ever keeping up with them. And you're pushing harder and harder. And you actually sometimes then go, what am I pushing hard for? Did that car, did that holiday, did that house, did that financial stress really make me feel better about myself? And then you're in that ripple then. And the value, the really important things is relationship with people.
Mm.
Do I do anything for myself? Do I have any structure in my own life? Do I look after my health? You know, what's the conversations I'm having? Do I have real friends around me? Do I enjoy my job? Mm. Or am I just coasting? Start asking those type of questions. You'll get a good response internally. They'll tell you the truth.
Yeah, for sure. And then, you know, you're taking a realistic assessment of where you're at. Because if you don't know where you're at, you don't know how to move forward, right? You're kind of like unaware. It's a bit like having, and I'm, you know, hey, I'm no expert at this. It's a bit like not checking your bank balance before you go out and buy something, right? If you don't know how much is in there, you don't know if you can afford this thing or not. And it's the same with ourselves looking inward and going, maybe I am XYZ. You know, people have said this. Maybe I need to look into this. Or people have said this, and actually I've looked into this, and there's no evidence for that as well. But it's having a realistic kind of assessment.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing we discussed just a little bit off before we start was the journal aspect.
Yes.
I think, you know, overwhelm is one of the most common things everyone experiences. And our mind is the best thing about creating tricks on us. It lies to us. It'll create dragons. It'll dwell on our past. It'll worry about our future. It'll look at areas and put fear into our life. But if we essentially write this down, you'll recognize pretty quickly if you write it down in your journal, whatever's going on, you'll recognize pretty quickly that there's a lot of lies that you tell yourself, and you recognize that's not true, or that might be true, but it hasn't happened yet. Or, but that is actually what's going on in my life. And before you know it, that overwhelm just decompresses, and that brain dump that you've experienced, you just feel like you're back present again. You're not worrying anymore again. So that's a massive aspect of journaling, which we've just discussed off here.
Yeah, for sure. And what I love about it is a great reflection. You know, that's what you're saying there. Like, you're looking back, and you can even look at, like, I've done it plenty of times. I've written stuff out and I've looked at it and I go, what the hell am I thinking, man? Where's that come from? I'm going to discard that. So that's one layer. But then there's another layer of actually having these thoughts, these feelings outside of your body now.
Yeah.
You know, they're in here, but you've actually got a place where you've expressed them. You looked out there and you go, I'm going to burn that page. Or I'm going to leave that there for later on to reflect on whatever. But it's kind of frees your brain up for other things.
So true. Yeah, literally that, you know. You've got to let go of that baggage that you carry. You know, you have, like, let's just say, I always say this to my clients, is you have a bandwidth of 100 every day. Now, if you're giving energy or time to things which do not benefit you, let's say you give 40% of your bandwidth to problems, to people, to negative energy, to worries, stresses that are not even there sometimes, then you're working with only 60% of bandwidth already just to start your day. And then, you know, you impact, you put X amount into that. You can't afford to keep doing that every day. Like, you're chasing your tail. That's when that internal dialogue comes in, that limiting belief. I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. What do other people think about me? And then the vicious loop happens. So it's constantly shifting that focus and putting it back into a positive state.
Yeah, for sure. I think it'd be a bit crazy not to talk about our journals, because, like, we've kind of naturally come onto that topic. So So here's mine. This is the Courage Journal.
Nice, man.
It was designed to help you build courage over 31 days. Lots of daily reflections, guided prompts, things like that. What was yesterday like? How am I feeling? What am I thinking? There's a little bit of an inspirational quote for each day and a little bit of a study around the quote. And then after that, it's about encouraging yourself. So affirmations, yeah. What you're looking forward to today, that kind of stuff, and the gratitude at the end of the day. Coming from a place of anxiety to kind of build courage on a day to day. And actually, it's volume one, so it's work in progress, of course, everything is. But the feedback I've got has blown my mind. I'm like, this is amazing. Fantastic. Yeah. So that's the Courage Journal. Yeah, and there's links in the description and stuff in it if anyone wants to grab a hold of one. But I'm going to throw it over to you. Tell me about your journal, because I don't know much about it.
Oh, appreciate it. But first of all, man, like, regardless, I love the fact that another male is journaling, not just a female, but a male as well. It's a massive thing. To be honest, growing up, if you said, I've got a journal, people just laugh at you, wouldn't they? I love the fact you do that. And so please, people, get ahead of this journal and buy your journal. I would love that.
Fantastic.
I suppose in my journal, I'll just grab it over here. This is my journal here. It's called the Mindset Master. So it's a 90-day journal. If I could explain it, it's more, yes, you've got your daily questions, because a lot of people, what you just covered was, they don't know where to start in the journal. They don't know what do I have to do in this? So it's got prompts of questions, to kind of reflective questions, what actions you want to take today. But the biggest thing in mind, I suppose, is I call it the 5 F's. So, you know, your focus, family, your finances, your fitness, and your, what was the last one? Freedom. So when we look at these, your fun, most importantly, with these ones, if we don't plan it, if you don't schedule it, you're never going to do it. People always say, oh, I want to go on that holiday, or I need to spend more time with my family, or I want to look at my fitness. But if you have a busy life already, how do you create the time to put this on a busy life already? So you've got to actually get clarity on these things. So with the coaching, you get the 90-day journal, and you're held accountable for one-to-one coaching, group programs, the training I have, but it's all holding you accountable to things that you want, but it's actually giving you clarity. So it's got your personal mission statement, it's got your business mission statement, it's got the brain dump on there. Once you start to get clear on something, the goal that we set, it should essentially scare you. It's one of those things, if you say it out loud, you'll go, crap, this, oh, I've actually actioned this now, I've said it out loud. That's the goal that this is meant to have. Because if it's a goal that doesn't scare you, I don't think it's a goal that you should be having. It should be something going, oh, I've got to build some urgency towards this. And when we have urgency and we put our intention on something that we know would grow us, it's going to create discomfort in our life because it's getting us uncomfortable. That's where real growth comes from, because it's aligning yourself with what you want. So it's all in there. But either way, man, if anyone gets a journal anywhere, yours, mine, or anywhere else, I really value that. So cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And there'll be a link to your journal in the YouTube comments below as well, or the description or whatever it is. So yeah, grab yourself a copy and check them out. So we've got 90 days there. We've got 31 days here. It's a short space of time, isn't it, to allow for some transformation in your life? Because I think, you know, we talked a little bit about peace at the beginning, but peace comes from clarity as well, you know, having a clear vision, clear goals. And it's not always about, you know, ticking those goals off, but it's having a direction to go in and then working your way as you go, you know.
Yeah. 100%. I totally agree with you.
All right. So bit of a brain break, if you like. Some quick fire questions. How do you feel about that? You ready?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. So favorite food, Ollie. What's your favorite food?
Man, I love burgers. I'm a smash burger. Brioche bun, cheese, bacon, tomato, lettuce. I'm all for that, you know, and a bit of mayo and ketchup.
Do you know what, right? I have so many guests on here who are female. And you're the first person who said burger, because they're like, come on, I'm with you, man, all the way.
Oh, all day. I love a burger, man. And I'm a wings guy. I love chicken.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I love them so much.
Yeah. Burgers and wings, man. Can't go wrong.
How about you? What are yours?
Do you know what? Funny enough, I'm not just saying this, but it is a burger. Like, it's my go-to, you know.
Yeah.
Or a steak if you're, you know, if you're splashing out a little bit. But yeah, I love a good burger. And there's so many different combinations, variations you can do. But pretty much what you've said there is pretty much what I would order as well.
Yeah.
Gotta have a pickle though. Gotta have a pickle.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm not a pickle man.
You're not a pickle man. All
right. I used to, you know, growing up, if you're on a McDonald's, there'd always be a pickle on it. I'd always give that to my mate or my brother or something, just have that.
See, I'm the guy. So my sister was the same. So she'd give me all of her pickles. I'd be like, oh, I'll have that. I'll have that. Love it. All right. Next question. Cats or dogs? I think I know the
dogs.
Answer.
Yeah. Dogs all day. Love a dog.
Because you got a dog, haven't you?
Yeah, I've got a dog. My girlfriend's got two cats though, and I've learned to love them. But dogs all day.
Was that part of the package? Oh, like, you know, I've got two cats. All right, fine. I'll learn to love them. Here we go.
It's funny though. Before I met her, I seen on, she had it on social media, and she had cats on it, and I'm like, so, that stage, so anti-cats, I was close to unfollowing it. That's how mad it was. And then I met her in a coffee shop, and she was amazing. So after that, I learned to love cats.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, yeah, they're a bit all over the place, aren't they, cats? But yeah, dogs are 100%. A bit more consistent, I'd say.
Yeah, 100%.
All right. Left or right?
Oh, this one, I thought about this before, right? Because I'm left-handed. But I throw the ball in my right hand. So I'm going to say left for this.
Okay. All right. Cool. Favorite season?
Summer.
Summer. Okay. Yeah. All right. Because you were in Australia for a while, but we'll come to that when we're not doing quick fire. All right. Favorite sport?
You know what? I love UFC now.
Okay.
I love watching UFC. Obviously, rugby was my background, but I love watching UFC. Maybe it's the manly thing, the barbaric thing, or I don't know, but I love it.
Yeah, fair. And then star sign. Do you have a star sign? Do you know your star sign? Leo. Okay. Yeah, I think fire sign.
Yeah, might be. I think it's a lion.
It's a lion. That's right. Yeah. I'm a Sagittarian, so apparently, I mean, not that I like believe in this stuff that much, but like Sagittarians and Leo have good connections. There you go. Are you a dress up or a dress down sort of person?
I'm gonna say probably dress down. I love chilling. I love my chill clothes, especially now as we go into December, it's getting colder. I love just chucking a nice coat on, snugging up, I'd place. Dress down.
All right, fair play. Are you known for being early, on time, or late?
Late, 100%. Yeah. I still play rugby today. My mates, if I pick them up to go to training or to the game, or I'm normally late and they go mad to me. So yeah, I'm late.
Where you been, Ollie? What's going on?
Yeah, I know. I'm too chilled in that area.
You're like, I was journaling, guys. I was journaling. what's a special location for you?
Probably, yeah, Australia would be the country. So Brisbane, that's where I was based. So that'll be special to me. Okay. Spending 10 years there, yeah.
All right, we're going to definitely come back to that. What's a book, a movie, or a TV show that you'd recommend to people?
A book I recommend, which is a great entry into like self-development, would probably be The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F-U-C-K.
Oh, yes, I've heard of it.
That was a great book for me, introduction. A movie, I love Jarhead. Do you remember Jarhead?
Jarhead?
Jarhead. I can't remember the actor in it. Jake Gyllenhaal,
yeah.
That guy,
Gyllenhaal.
And it's basically an army movie. I love action movies.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I'll check that out.
Yeah. And this is going to be weird, but you know that series was on Netflix recently? The guy, it's going to bug me now. He's a Newcastle guy, Geordie guy, but he kills people and puts his skin over himself. It's all on Netflix.
Oh, right. No, I don't know.
It's a crazy one. It'll come back to me later, but we'll figure it out.
I'm not going to ask if you've been inspired by any of this, but yeah.
No.
Do you know what? It was a book, a movie, or a TV show, but you did all three. So do you know what? I love that level of like, and you know, I just thought I'd let you roll with it. It's brilliant.
Thanks, man.
What made you decide to come on the podcast today? What was your thing?
I suppose the best thing was we connected on social media, but having someone from just looking from the outside in, very aligned.
Mm.
And I think it's very important to connect with people in similar industries or similar mindsets and values, because all that does is just reignite a bigger picture for everyone else. And I just love people who are chasing self-improvement.
Mm.
And your podcast is something, you know, with courage in there. So courage is massive, because it's, you know, it's a lot of that in what we do.
All right. Thanks for doing that. Quick fire-ish. Right. So I was thinking about like maybe finding out a little bit about your origins, your journey. So can you share a little bit about your upbringing, where you grew up, what might have had an influence on you?
So like I said, from Wales, so a little town called Bridgend. So that's where I was brought up. And I suppose everything that I've growing up was rugby. I'll be honest, I wasn't the smartest in school. Like classrooms, I believe, were my strengths. But I had two parents which were, you know, I suppose I was good at rugby, and they kind of like, as long as I was doing that, they were happy. Education wasn't a big push from them. But I do believe one aspect, even though I love my parents a bit, I do believe one aspect which was something that I've had to kind of reflect on and work on was basing my worth on performance. So growing up, that expectation of pushing in sports, in making teams, selections, contracts from the age of 7 to, you know, I remember maybe I got player of the month in a Rugby World magazine when I was 13. I was the youngest ever player to get it, and this is worldwide. And
come on,
it was amazing. I was so grateful for it. But I got sponsored by Mizuno, and my mum and Dad was so happy. But I connected my worth to that, which is a double-ended sword. And that played a massive factor. So then the age of 17, I got off the rugby league contract to Leeds Rhinos. So I moved from Wales to Leeds, lived in this, the team manager's house. It was this guy called Bob Pickles, one of the nicest guys ever, old fella. And I was living in his attic. So from the age of 17 to 19, I moved there. And that was, at that stage, Leeds Rhinos, if you don't know, were probably the biggest team in the world. They'd Kevin Sinfield, Rob Burrow recently passed away, Jamie Peacock. And if anyone knows rugby league, they know they're like the three big kingpins.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I had a knee reconstruction, my first ever serious injury, and I had to come back home. And then at 19, I got off the contract to play in Australia. And that was kind of the start of my journey. So my upbringing was from there, worked us all the way to Australia at the age of 19. Wow. And I just was chasing the rugby dream, essentially. So that was kind of the origin. I hope that explained that.
Yeah, you have. And what did that feel like, man, to get an offer to go out to the other side of the world and play in a league out there? What did that feel like?
It was amazing. I always wanted to go to Australia. I just didn't know when it was going to come. I believe the best thing about being young, you don't think things through, really. I didn't have any fear. I remember going out there with £500 in my pocket. And I remember getting picked up from the airport from the team manager. I said, look, I've got £500, which was $1,000. And he was like, I said, what can this get me? He was like, not a lot, mate. So he's like, well, let's get you into it straight away. So I was very fortunate. They put me into a house. And I really grew as an adult then. I really felt like I learned a lot about myself at 19 because I had to grow up real quick. I wasn't the kid anymore, you know. But that was amazing. Chasing my dream. I had a few injuries on the way, so I had another knee clean out. Just before going over there, I done a few ligaments, my ankle, which needed surgery on. So I went out there a bit undone. And then for 3 years then, I played rugby for Ipswich Jets, which was based in Brisbane. And that was all I ever wanted. I felt when you feel like that's your purpose, and anyone who's experienced sports, the noise goes away when you're playing rugby, when you're fully focused in the noise or whatever's going on in your world. I didn't really understand the anxieties, overwhelm, burnout, frustration at that stage. All I knew was just go. There was no off switch, it was just go. And then I met a lovely girl over there, which was my partner at the stage. And life has gone well. We bought a house together, I think, by the age of 23. And just before we moved in there, I did my ACL knee reconstruction on the same knee, which was the second time. And that was more the eye-opening part for me, because that was the first ever experience of like going, okay, well, I've got no support network here. Yes, I've got my partner, but I didn't know anything else. And I didn't know, it was essentially like having a chair. I put all my focus on one leg of a chair, but I didn't develop any skills of who I was. I didn't know like any other aspect, you know, career-wise, whatever I would do outside of the sports, connections, my health, my like mental health and things like this. All I put on was rugby. So when that happened, I suppose it was an eye-opener for me. And I remember it was the first ever experience after surgery where I experienced this tightness on my chest. Like I was like, what is this? And I did ignore it, keep myself busy, and it'd go away. Until a stage, I just couldn't handle it anymore. My coping mechanism was to push away. So at that age of 23, I pushed away a relationship, went into a house isolated. And I really was struggling massively then because I kind of pushed any form of support network away, regardless if it was right or wrong. And what I did, what most young guys do is I rebounded extremely quick into another relationship. And that person was a great person as well. But what I was doing, I was masking the internal dialogue that was going through me. So that stage then, that relationship was the cornerstone. And I got fit, I got healthy. And while my physical health was improving, it was improving my mental health as well. And then I got back to playing rugby at the age of 25 or 24. And it was as if like the universe was like, you need to learn, or God at that stage, you need to learn more about you. You need to figure this out because, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result.
Yeah, for sure.
So I went back to rugby, was playing extremely good again. I thought, oh my God, like, this is all I ever wanted again. Problems gone. The relationship was amazing. My mindset was amazing. My health was good. My confidence was good. And then halfway into the season, did my ACL for the third time in the same knee.
Oof.
And then I had to have an ankle clean out as well. And I remember then, I remember saying to the girl at the time, I said, look, you need to, best bet for us to end right now because I'm about to go into a hole, a mental hole.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was extremely tough. And just even thinking about it now, just it's a massive eye opener. Just reflecting on it, and I remember doing that. Went to get the surgery done. The doctor was like, "Right, you can't play rugby anymore." I was like, "What?" He's like, "Yeah, you can't play rugby anymore." I was like, "The percentage of that happened again now is so high."
Hmm.
And on top of that, the normal knee reconstruction takes between 9 to 12 months to return to play. So it's a long old process of being out. And this time he was like, look, because there's two pre-existing holes in your tibia bone and your fibia bone, we're going to have to go in there, clean it out, snap your patella, use the patella, fill the holes up like a tooth filling, let them set for 6 months, and then we're going to have the surgery. Or we might get lucky that you can get it all done now and it's just a 9 months and you'll be okay again. I was like, please, God, just get me through this. I woke up and he was like, yeah. We couldn't do the full reconstruction. We've got all the ligament out there, the old ligament. We filled the hole out. We broke your patella. And then what they realized then was that the tibia bone for my knee was on a 13 degree tilt. So they had to cut the tibia bone down onto a level field. So the knee would just sit perfectly instead of being on an angle, because that's how the ligament was always coming out of my knee.
Right.
So it was an 18 month return. To like a play overall. I had to wait 6 months after that surgery and then another 9 months or whatever equates to 18 months until I could get it to get my stuff together. And I kind of accepted in that stage rugby was done, but it was really my darkest times because I had nothing to focus on to get back. There was no anchor. And that was a stage where I was like, right, well, if I don't deal with this internal dialogue, whatever's going on in my world, I'm going to, I like at this stage, you know, like, not like I had a plan to kill myself, but definitely thought of like, this has got to end now. Like I can't live this way anymore. Struggling to get out of bed in the morning, you know, like brain fog, no purpose, no direction. I had to take a job, obviously, to pay my mortgage and live life. So I started doing demolition and asbestos work. I just didn't know where to turn. At that stage then, I started cycling and I started thinking, okay, well, if I can't play rugby anymore, I'm just going to do triathlon. So I started running, swimming. I couldn't swim at the stage, so I had to learn to swim. And I started to, cycle just to build the muscles up. And I thought, right, this is what it is. I'm going to be doing this for a while. I suppose at that stage, I started to read books. Listen to podcasts at that stage. I think it was just the Joe Rogan podcast at that stage I was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were pretty cool.
He's still going strong, isn't he, Joe?
Yeah, he's killing it, Joe is. But I really pushed everything away. But I was, you know, I was self-sabotaging myself because I was drinking on the weekend still, you know, doing things I shouldn't be doing, surrounding myself with the wrong people and kind of accepting this level of life because I felt at that stage I was stuck. This is where I am without rugby. I had no identity.
Yeah.
Lost my self-esteem. So I started doing this job, asbestos demolition. And in between this time as well, I'd party on the weekends. And it was really interesting. At this stage, which was like the breakthrough for me of just like cracking into like hope in my life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because every day was just anxiety. Every day was crippling anxiety, tightness in my chest. And I would wake up every Sunday hungover after a night out. And I'd walk down to this petrol station in Australia. And every time I'd go there, there was this church. And I wasn't religious at this stage. There was this church on the right. And I could just hear the hymns all the time walking there. And something inside of me was telling me, you need to go in. And I'd ignore it. And at 3-4 months, I'd keep ignoring it. And I thought, bugger this, you know, waking up with this crippling tightness in my chest, no sense of purpose, you know, this isn't life.
And if you don't mind me jumping in, you were grieving, right? You were grieving a life, like a sport that was your everything. So, you know, there's a level of grief that comes with that level of loss, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, grief. loss, but a guilt as well. The biggest one was guilt. I had guilt of ruining two relationships, one that was long term. I you know, when you let the dust settle, you decompress and you realize that you have a massive part to play in this as well. You can't keep pointing the finger. I you know, and that was a big one. So it was all of these emotions, this identity was gone, and you know, this hope. I remember this one part, I really missed it, so I want to really say it was, I remember this one part, I rang my mum on my third knee reconstruction, and this connects back to the childhood thing. And I remember ringing her and saying, "Mum, I've done my knee this again." And the World Cup was 6 months away from that period. I rang my mum and I said, "Mum," and she's in the UK, and she didn't say, "How are you?" She just said, "Oh, does this mean you can't play in the Rugby World Cup?" And I was like shattered. But all I wanted at that stage of my life was just someone to be like, "Are you okay?
Yeah.
Are you okay?" And I've had this conversation with my mum right now. And the other part is she didn't know. All she was like wired in her head was like, "Could you not make these things anymore?" But all I needed that in my life. So I connected worth to doing good. I connected my worth to validation, to doing performance was the way that I felt good enough. So that really hit home. And then moving forward now to ignoring, you know, ignoring that church, the hymns and all that stuff, I finally had a moment, I go, I've got to go in there. So I went into the church at the back and I just listened to this pastor Russell Harper, and I just spoke to him. And I said, "Mate, whatever you just said right then at the end of the service," I said, "I don't know what it was, but it just hit me right in the chest." And he said, "Wow, man, that's amazing. What are you doing right now?" I said, "I'm removing asbestos. I'm doing this XYZ." He goes, "Okay, what else do you do?" I said, "Oh, I cycle as well now." And then he goes, "Oh, cool, I cycle." I said, "Oh, wow." He goes, "I tell you what, next Saturday, I'll meet you in the morning and we'll cycle together." And I was like, wow, this guy doesn't even know me. And he's offered me to cycle with him. And I felt a bit like, oh, I'm not sure. Like, this is a bit weird. A bit odd from a guy to just say this, but he just cared. I rocked up that Saturday, went for a cycle with him, and we shared, we spoke to each other, and he just listened, but he kind of like gave me little prompts. He wasn't telling me what to do, but he was just directing me slightly, you know, this hope, this, that, and the other. And every Sunday and every Saturday, I would just go for a cycle with him, and I'd go church on the Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly but surely, I just leant into it more, and I just realized through connecting via Russell, connecting to God, that what I was actually serving, what my bigger purpose was, and my calling essentially that stage was. And I, you know, I've, you know, from then I've really leant into God and Christianity, and there's that's another journey on its own, you know, but it was a cornerstone of my life now. So that happened.
Wow. Can I just quickly say,
please.
As a Christian myself, when you strip a lot of it away, the central message is hope, right? Hope for a broken world. And it's so interesting that you found that at a time where you felt hopeless, reflecting what you're saying there. Which makes a lot of sense. And you're getting some free coaching, right, on the bike on Saturdays.
Yeah, oh, amazing. Well, he was teaching me how to cycle. He was Russell's 63 or 2 now. I don't want to give him a couple of extra years if he listens to this. But he was giving me free coaching, but he made me realize he wasn't doing it for him. He was doing it to serve God. And I think when you, regardless of whatever you do in life, you feel like you're serving God in that purpose or whatever you're doing, if that's stacking shelves at Tesco's, if that is working in a coffee shop, if that is being a therapist or whatever it is, and you're serving something bigger, that cornerstone is always held there for me. So whatever season I'm going through in life, if I always have that remembrance of I'm doing it for the bigger picture, when I put it about me, it's not healthy. But when I put it out to this bigger picture, life aligns. And one big message I always asked him was like, I always used to say, you know, I need you to do this for me. I need you to do this. And he said, and I remember speaking to Russell about this, and he said, no, it's about what he does through you. It's not about changing this to make your life better. It's actually what he does through you to change and shift internally. So that was a massive thing that happened. And then these two areas of my life were like cornerstones, which started the journey for me then. So the church happened. And I still wasn't, it was, you know, I was, the seed was planted, and then I was doing an asbestos and demolition job, which I hated every day. And the boss said to me, hey, there's a job, 10 days working in a place called Nauru. So, and it was removing asbestos sheets for a power plant. So now, if anyone knows Australia, you have Papua New Guinea above it, and just to the right, you have these little islands, New Caledonia, I think it's the French Polynesian countries, and you have this little island called Nauru. And Nauru, you can drive it in 30 minutes. So a lot of the people there, they have a mix of like a Fijian and Papua New Guinea look to them. That's how I'd say they look. And when I was there, we went over there. It was boiling hot. You were in a mask and suit all day. We were removing these asbestos sheets. And we could have laborers from Nauru, the locals, work for us. But a lot of them would rock up. And by the first hour, they were gone because the work was so hard. And we couldn't get any guys to come work with us. So they said, look, there's a refugee camp in the middle of the island. Someone, we can ask them. So we were like, yeah, for sure. So there was this recruitment company there that offered that. So they came down. There's this one guy called Saji. And Saji was amazing. Like, he just had this energy about him. He was bubbly. He was chirpy. He was smiling. And I was like, wow, where I was in my life, you know, that I was always negative, you know, half empty mentality at that stage. And he goes, I want this guy to work with me. So me and him started working together. And I passed the sheets out to him every day. He'd be like, Ollie, would you want a cup of tea? Do you want a glass of water? Do you want anything? Oh, this guy's so nice. Small little guy from Bangladesh. So one day now, it started raining. And I said, come back to my hotel and I'll give you some clothes because his clothes are drenched. So I gave him a load of clothes. I said, what other clothes have you got? And he said, oh, this is all I've got. So every night I dry it on the line because it's so hot. They would dry, be ready to wear the next day. I said, okay, cool. So Sarge, you need to tell me how and why you're here. He goes, I'll explain it in the morning. So he went back. And the next day then I started walking to the job site. And he was sitting on the side of the road with his legs crossed and his eyes closed. And I was like, what is he doing? And As he finished, I said, Saji, what was that? And he goes, oh, it's meditation. He said, it stops me worrying about my past. Stops me worrying about my future. I could just be where my feet are today. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, that sounds amazing. The guy who was overthinking everything. Worrying, holding on to my past, guilt, fear, what's my journey, all of these things. And I'm like, I need to know about this. I said, spill the beans now, Sarge. How are you here? He said, well, I'm from Bangladesh. We had these people come through our little village in Bangladesh and they shot up the village. And he said, he shot his mum and dad and they like turned the gun towards him and some people. And they said, you either leave or we're going to do the same to you. So he just ran to the nearest shore, jumped on this boat, and the boat was taking him to Melbourne, Australia. And his wife is in the village. So he was, you know, as he was going to Melbourne, Australia, there's offshore police detoured and took them to Nauru. And he's been there at that stage. He was there 4 years.
Wow.
So I'm bawling my eyes out, crying, thinking, wow, this is crazy. He had so much less than me externally. But he had so much more internally inside than I ever had, where I was from a westernized world. So I just hugged him, spoke to him, and I was like, mate, you need to show me this meditation stuff. I felt it made me realize my problems weren't that bad as well. I needed a little kick up the backside to be like, wake up now, come on. Life's gonna move on and you've gotta move with it. Otherwise you're gonna be held back. So show me about this meditation. And then when I went back to Australia, I went to this retreat. And when I went to the retreat, this guy said to me, everyone here's got a God-given talent. You just need to figure out what that is for you, what that is. Over the weekend, sit on it, journal on it. And anyway, I come back to him. I said, I think my talent is listening and talking to people. And he said, all right, well, the day you plant the seed is not the day you eat the fruit. See where this goes. So that stage then, I was all in. I created urgency in my life. I created like this something new. I had this energy inside me. So every Sunday, I started doing these stairs in Brisbane called Kangaroo Point Stairs. We'd run them. I'd put it on my story on Instagram. Anyone wants to come on down. Start with one person, two person, three people. Next thing, there was 50 people on a Sunday morning at 6:30 come to these stairs. We'd have a coffee. I'd do the meditation with them. And then I'd stand and talk. Next thing then, life just started like flowing. I started getting into podcasting. Having connections, conversations like this with people after coffees with friends. And I was like, there's something about this, And it was an internal fulfillment. It wasn't to please people, to feel good. It was about this. I felt like I was really speaking from the core. And that was the cornerstone of where it all started in 2020. we're turning into 2026 now. From that, I spent my whole time not playing rugby anymore for those 4 or 5 years. My brother was in Australia at this stage, and he said, "Ollie, come play rugby with us, rugby league." I said, "No, mate, I'm good. I'm fine. I don't want to play anymore." He said, "Come on, play. We need you for the last couple of days." I was like, "Look, I'll play for fun, and that's it." Mm-hmm. Those last 5, 6 games, the World Cup year was that year. And I had a phone call after the 6 games. "Hey, Ollie, we want to put you into the train-on team for the World Cup. Would you be interested?" My first initial thought was like, no, but I was like, I've missed out on all of the World Cups, all opportunities. I'd be stupid not to say yes to it. I had so much fear going into it because of all the pre-existing injuries and what ifs, the hole I don't want to go back down to. But I actually come out the other side so much more rounded as a person. Mm. I knew who I was. I knew what my vision was, what I wanted to do. And I didn't attach my identity to anymore. So I accepted it, played in the Rugby World Cup in the UK. And I felt like the journey I was on was far greater than the journey that I thought that I was meant to. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You make me think of the parallel. You ever watched the Batman movies, Chris Nolan's Batman movies?
Some of them. I'm not amazing at these ones, but okay, please tell.
His parents get killed. He turns into a vigilante. He wants to like take out the mob, etc. And he can't do it. And then he kind of gets taken away. He goes and does like he's in prison for a while. He tries to do good in the world, whatever. But he hasn't found himself. So short version of the story is he basically goes into training, but he hasn't found himself. And where he finds himself is a really beautiful place where he has this massive awakening, and then he comes back as Batman, but he comes back to his old life. Yeah. And it kind of, I don't know why it came to my mind there when you were talking. It was like, look, you had that massive break from rugby, not even knowing it was a break, right? It was done. Yeah, it was over. And then it sounds like you found yourself there. You're grounded. You're now, you know, who you're called to be. And then we think, okay, that's it. We move forward. But actually sometimes the past knocks back at our door again and says, hello. And you go, no. But you're a different person now. And so now you're kind of being, you know, it's like God, the universe, whatever label you want to put on it.
Yeah.
Has taken you to a place, and it's still your choice, of course, to go, right, now I've got resilience, I've got courage, I've got hope, I've got fulfillment. Yeah. I can go in with a different mindset, and it looks like that's what happened to you there. That's incredible.
No, I really appreciate it. And I think when I speak about it, it kind of just brings more things up my head. Like it makes, when you're in a professional environment with sports, it is a very selfish sport, as in you've got to think about you, and you are the wheel that you've got to turn to perform the best. What it made me realize coming away from it was like, you're not as important as you think you are. Like you're not, people don't value you for that. They value you for you. But it made me care a lot more about people. It made me view people differently. And it, even in relationships, my perspective on relationships, how I look at relationships now is like, you know, it's a lot of give and take. It's a lot of grace. It's a lot of learning. And not every adversity you walk away from, you learn, you overcome, you communicate your needs, and you can learn about boundaries. It was so many things I've shifted in my life from then. And even down to, you know, God, Christianity, that's been a journey on its own as well. I don't want to be like there's a fairy tale ending to that, because when I met then to where it is now, I still have moments of doubt. I still have moments of questioning. Oh, why do I only pray when things are going bad in my life? Why can't I pray when things are going good as well and be grateful for the Lord in my life? And there's so many things that you reflect on. And if you're a curious person, continue to be curious. I used to question why I used to overthink a lot, but it's really down to being curious about people and curious about learning. And I've shifted that perspective on that. And using that life and what I went through in sports and all those things has really been the cornerstone of my business, is setting structure in your life, setting systems in your life, and prioritizing filling your cup up before providing to others. Because at that stage in my life, I was helping so many people but feeling so empty inside. But when you start to do things from filling your own cup up, prioritizing your needs, you know, looking after your health, looking after your family, looking after what you value, you're such a better person for other people. Yeah. Your relationships are better, your work ethic's better, your generosity, your care is so much better, and your staff members and you know, and how you see things. You're not worrying about, will this fail? You're like, well, what happens if I take this opportunity and lean into fear on the benefits that can come from it, and who else can they impact? It's a transformable way of living.
Yeah, and to add to that as well, like when people look at your life and you're preaching a message, you're, you know, giving advice, you're coaching, whatever, if you're doing that from a place of burnout, you could say the most incredible things in the world. But if your life doesn't look like a life that people want to aspire to be like, or at least, you know, align with, you're actually doing a disservice, because, you know, going back to, you mentioned Jordan Peterson earlier on, one thing that really stood out from what he said, from what I was reading in his book, is treat yourself like someone that you're supposed to look after.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we do it for other people, don't we? We're like, oh, you know, you encourage someone, you affirm them, you give them love, etc. But then how much of that do you do for yourself?
Yeah.
And I know it's cringy, and I know it feels, as men, right? As men, like, we're supposed to have our stuff sorted out, you know? Stiff upper lip, don't cry, all the rest of it, which I think there's room for, don't get me wrong. I'm not like swinging completely in the other direction. But actually, there is an element of, hey, man, I'm hurting or I'm broken. I need to sort myself out. You know, earlier on in the podcast, we were talking about just taking an assessment of where you're at.
Yeah.
And you do that for people that you love and care about. Why are we not doing that for ourselves, you know? And I think that's where we align a lot.
Massively. It's so important as well, though, because these are like the two double-edged swords as well. So, like, people are amazing at giving advice to other people, but they don't take their own advice. Like you just said earlier, in a different format. And that's the quickest way to lose any form of self-respect to yourself. If you tell yourself, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and you don't do it, even down to little things like I hit snooze in the morning, or I don't go to the gym, I skip that meeting, or I skip that thing, that sales call, or I avoid reaching out to that person. It just doubles down on losing respect to yourself. And then the other side of it, right, is, and this is people that will always, some people disagree with me, is the word mental health. So I believe people who suffer with mental health, which is everyone, or struggle with mental health in aspects, if you go to people and vent your problems to a person, right, a friend, X, Y, and Z, and you don't put any form of action towards it, so you don't actually go, okay, there's a plan of action now, so this is what's impacting your life. Either have that conversation with the person or whatever stress is going on, and you're not willing to take that action, then you're going to come back into this loop next week and we're going to have the same conversation. So if you're constantly going to whinge about your problems, all you're doing is rehashing a negative motion, which is going to bring up a negative state.
Yep.
But if you're not going to do anything about it or set a plan or system or structure it or schedule it, you're going to come back into this problem next week. So if you're wanting to vent all the time, you're always going to feel that negative emotion, the mental health state. But if you go to speak to someone who's going to be like, hey, calling you out on your bullshit a little bit, you need those friends in your life.
Yeah.
Agreed. And you need those people like, right, well, you just told me now on Saturday, you're going to leave that job because it's impacting you this much and you've got an opportunity down the road. The conversation you have, you know, even though it's discomfort, is having that conversation on Saturday with that person. Are you going to do it? I need you to hold me accountable to that. Because if you don't, you're going to cut corners and you're constantly going to be back in that area. And that's just a little plan on it. But my theory on mental health is, you've got to have an action plan to it. Otherwise, you're going to be in this state all the time.
Yeah. And it's knowing when to see a coach.
Yeah.
It's knowing when to see a therapist. And it's knowing when to see a mentor. You know, because they're three different threads. And I think we pile them into one, you know.
Yeah.
If you're really struggling with trauma, you're really like something happened to you, or you can't get out of a particular state, go and see a therapist, go and see a psychologist, EFT. You know, there's so many different types of therapy out there. Great. But that's not the end goal. That is just to kind of get you to a place where, you know, it's a bit like, and I've never been on them, but my understanding of an antidepressant is to get you to a particular level, so that then from that level, you can find your way forward. You know, it's not to be reliant on them.
Yeah.
And if you're hearing that for the first time, then believe me, if you're listening to this, go and action that, right?
Yeah.
But with therapy, that's that. And then with coaching, it's like, okay, I'm not here to tell you what to do, but I'm happy to reflect back to you, and let's walk alongside you, let's shepherd with you, let's do that kind of stuff, which is, I think we all need both. And then you've got the mentorship side, where I've been where you are, let me show you the way out.
Yeah.
And I think when we have that clarity in our minds, because otherwise we just think, oh, our mentor, our therapist, our coach is just our parent. Is going to tell us what to do, give us a gold star, and that's it. Everything's all right in life. But it doesn't work like that, does it?
Not at all, man. Not at all. And it's definitely that. It's asking those questions. Like, the biggest thing is, what is the story that you keep telling yourself which is holding you back? What is going on there? And once you understand what's going on in the subconscious, what is the limiting beliefs? we all have limiting beliefs. We have things which hold us back. But once you become aware of the story that you keep telling yourself and what's holding you back, and you stop flicking the pointing the finger out, because there's three pointing back at you.
Yeah.
Or the thumb pointing back at you, however it is. And you look at me first before you, you start to shift things. And I've learned that relationships, and I've learned that with work, coaching people. You know, like you're saying, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. Why do you constantly go into these relationships with toxic environments? Why do you constantly let people walk all over you? What part are you playing in that? Why aren't you communicating your needs? Why aren't you having boundaries in place? Why are you not communicating your expectations to start? Where do you want this relationship to go? If you don't have those conversations and this person walks over you, you've played a part in this, because you're going to go through life having the same problems until you decide, today I'm going to plant my seed and have that chat straight away. And it's the same with work, and it's the same with life. It's the same with structure, same with overwhelm. You've got to, there's a plan in place. And that's the biggest thing with the, what I do with, you know, subconscious work. NLP is massive in that area.
Yeah, love that. And I think even with relationships, you know, you touched on it there. Like, if there's this quote, let me see if I can remember it. It's something like, you accept the love that you think you deserve, something like that. And so when you're picking a partner, if you think low of yourself, your standards for that partner are going to be unboundaried, right? And again, you know, you can go to the superficial. She has to look like this. He has to look like that. It needs to drive this car, have this job, whatever. I think that's all surface level. Actually, what you want to be looking at is, this person going to hold me to account? Is this person going to show me affection if I'm an affectionate person? Is this person going to put in the work as I'm putting in the work? You know, that those are like important foundational things before you even get to, you know, what things look like on the outside. And again, it's like, you can't do that unless you've done the work in terms of taking accountability. You mentioned two relationships, and I'm sure, you know, it takes two to tango, but what I really picked up from what you were saying there, you know, you have some ownership over why things didn't go the way they did. And, you know, I can hold my hands to that in my previous experiences as well. And it's what you learn from that. It's not like to hide in guilt and shame and go, right, I messed up. But actually, what did I learn? I have an anxious attachment style, or this is my love language, or this is how I react to conflict or whatever. And it's kind of working on that and moving forward. So there is an element of judgment there, but judgment from the perspective of, how can I grow? Not how judgment grow? From the perspective of, you did wrong, I did wrong, whatever.
Like 100%. It's not about you did wrong, they did wrong. It's actually like reflecting and go, what can I positively learn from this that I can move forward? And the biggest one is, a lot of your relationship attachments stem from childhood, your parents. How do they show love? How did they deal with conflict? Do they communicate? You know, a lot of people's, I think my parents are not good communicators. So if you don't have good communicators, or people let you understand emotions, because every emotion that comes up in your body is not a negative one. It's just how your body's dealing with the fear of it. And then you got to, you know, understand, sometimes people get this negative emotion coming up in a discomfort of a relationship. Doesn't mean the relationship's wrong. It's just how your body's attached this. Maybe you're not used to communication. Maybe you're not used to someone being like, hey, how you say that or how you do this doesn't actually work here. It doesn't, like, that's not a healthy action to do. Now, doesn't mean we're in a society now that everything's red flags, toxic, this, red flag. Like, if someone's cheating on you, someone's texting other people, that's red flags. But if someone's just, you know what, communicating their needs, their values, how they receive love, how you receive love, what your love language is, that's healthy.
Yeah, I agree.
That's healthy. And that's growing. I think as well, like, you know, I'm going on a bit of a tangent. I think we grown up in a Disney world where everything's happily ever after. We're actually like, it's work involved. And that's if you're passionate about something, the word passion is accepting that it's going to be hard, but because you're passionate about it, you've got to keep turning up for it. If you have a passion with work has not always been ups and downs. There's ebbs and flows to life, but understanding the bigger picture, why you're doing it, is understanding that you're willing to ride the waves of these two, and that's a part of the journey, and that's where you grow.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, at least in my understanding of curious mind, is why I've landed on courage. I feel like courage is one of the virtues that underpins all the other ones, because in order to, you know, take that offer to Australia, or to get into a relationship, or you know, even you heard the church hymns and you went into the church, like that takes courage, right?
Yeah.
That's not something that is like, you know, it's comfort zone. It's anti-comfort zone. And I think some of that action that we need to take and keep moving forward is kind of like the underpinning, like I said, to most of our life decisions. Because it's so easy, right, to, you know, cuddle up in the blanket, you know, do some bed rotting and watch your Netflix binging and, you know, the weeks just go past. Scrolling on your phone, like you said earlier on, where your brain, you know, it's not good for you, right?
Mm.
Junk food, mate, we talked about burgers earlier on, like, I mean, healthy burgers, right? But but like, you can't live on that diet, right? So you know that all... It's not that everything's toxic, everything's bad. It's like, how do you moderate that based on who you are? And I know I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but if I take the analogy of like nutrition, for example.
Yeah.
You must eat this many eggs. You must have this. Oh, you must be a vegan. You must, you know, all of this stuff. It's like, I think there's some truth in a lot of that stuff. But what people forget is they're looking for someone to answer the question that they can't answer themselves. Actually, Ricks, no one knows you better than me. So... Yeah. I know what's good for me. I know which foods to avoid. I know which makes my tummy, you know, which ones make my tummy upset. I know I can't eat chili food much anymore like I used to, you know, all of that kind of stuff. You're the expert on yourself, isn't it? And it's kind of working out, you know, what works for you. Whether, I mean, I'm using the analogy of food, but everything like attachment styles, love languages, the works,
Even down to like some people, a lot of people, I've done it at stages like abuse the gym. The gym can be something which is amazing. You know, overusing the gym is a way of, you know, it's an addiction because it gives you, you know, that serotonin, that dopamine, endorphins come up. But then if that's your area that you're abusing it all the time, every day, you're doubling down, doing 2-3 sessions a day, but you're not actually addressing what's going on underneath that, then that's when it becomes an unhealthy habit again. So I think it's moderation, right? The word moderation comes up.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And with moderation comes peace, right? Bring the full circle there. I think I would regret if I didn't ask you this. And, you know, you mentioned playing at World Cup level. I know you're a humble guy, but can you give us a little bit of insight what that means for us people who are not into rugby? That's rugby league. You played for, who did you represent? Wales?
Wales, my country, yeah. What does it mean to me or what the...
Yeah, what does it mean to play at that level? Like, to you and just, you know, that's, I mean, in my eyes, that's a big deal. That's huge, right? Like, if you're in a sport and you get to play for your country, I don't know if there's anything higher than that.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was, I remember just singing the anthem and in that moment, you're singing the anthem, but you're not thinking about the moment. You're thinking about that journey. Like the late nights, my mum would take me training as a kid. You're thinking the sacrifices, you know, the setbacks, how many times I got told I wasn't good enough, how many times I had my contract ending and you got to find another opportunity. And you think like, wow, I finally got here. And it's just everything. Like, I think when you're that level, it's funny. I can't really put it into words, to be honest, Rex, because it's like, it's everything you ever wanted. But I didn't really sit on the win until I fully ended the World Cup. I sat back after being 100 miles per hour for 6-7 weeks, being in the camps, the hotels, the training, you know, the playing against Tonga, the you know, the ceremonial war dance they do before the game. You've got these Polynesian guys doing this and scaring the crap out of you, and you're just like, this is what it's all about. You know, you're in these amazing stadiums, and you're just like, wow, I'm just so grateful that I just kept sticking to this. It's probably something I need to reflect on more, but I'm just so grateful it happened. And I just feel like, you know, whatever happens now moving forward, I've ticked that box. And I ticked it away. I didn't expect it to happen. And then after that, I got offered a rugby contract then in England. And that's what brought me home from Australia, was coming home to England and living in Manchester for a bit, then back to Wales. But it was amazing. All I can say is, if I can sum it up in one word, amazing.
Yeah, being in those stadiums, being on the pitch with people that I would imagine that you respect and probably look up to as well, and being one of the people on there and being peers, that must have done incredible things on the inside, even if you haven't fully kind of processed it all.
That's
amazing.
It's amazing. It makes you realize there was no fancy tool, which I kind of put into my business now. Like, I remember my coach, saying to me, he put on the whiteboard before the game, he said, kiss. He just went K.ISS and he just said, keep it simple, stupid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It was a simple message like that that made me laugh. It made me realize when you're out in that field, you don't have to be amazing. You don't have to do something spectacular. It's about knowing your role, knowing what you have to do to provide a service to the team. Because you're one piece of the puzzle. You're not the rock star. You're the piece of the puzzle that brings everything together. And that's a bit like what we do in life.
Mm.
So understanding that you're a piece of the puzzle was massive. And just playing with like two... One guy in particular, we went from school together and then we were playing together for Wales in the World Cup. And he went from the age of 13 from Wales to Warrington Wolves. So being able to play together in the World Cup from being two kids in a primary school together was pretty amazing.
That's incredible. So, yeah. Mate, that's like a movie, man, or a TV show or something, you know, that whole kind of thing. Not even going into the other stuff that you talked about. Yeah. That's amazing. You talked about being a piece of the puzzle, and I can see the link between what you were saying earlier on in terms of if you live for yourself, it's a small way to live, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you mentioned like if you let God live through you, it's like you're a vessel, isn't it? And you're allowing, let's when you say God is such a big thing, isn't it? Let me just specify that when we're talking about God, we're talking about love that you cannot fathom. Right?
Mm.
And so when you allow love that you cannot fathom to work through you, it's like you're a piece of the puzzle then. And then we're all part of this massive jigsaw puzzle that we can't quite work out. And we can't see it from the top, right? But if we play our little piece, or become the piece, I should say, be who you are, linking to your reel yesterday, then you fit nicely in that, don't you?
So true, yeah, definitely. You're a vessel. You're a vessel of his, you know, and it's made me meet some amazing people. It's made me do things I probably would never have done before. And I never say this is my work. I just say that's God working through me all the time now. And like, I'm serving God. And none of this would have been possible today. I don't think I'd be here today if it weren't for God.
Mm.
How much it means to me, you know?
Yeah. And like, so I don't know if you've had the experience. For me, like I've been part of church communities, been on leadership panels and done all sorts of amazing things. And what I find really interesting of where I'm at now is... you can know all the Bible verses, you know, you can know how to welcome someone, you can understand that there's three verses to this song and, you know, all the stuff, right? But actually, when push comes to shove, it's exactly like you were saying on the rugby pitch, right? Keep it simple, stupid, right? Actually, can I provide some value to the people who are around me right now in this present time? Not yeah. Tomorrow, not yesterday, but actually, am I contributing something good here? Even if that contribution is being a sounding board for someone who's moaning about their life, okay, yeah. Fine. But then the next time, like you said, you know, if that's a cycle, maybe the third time around you go, the best way I can provide love for this person now is to reflect back what they're saying and challenge them towards some action. And all those little things, I think, is living that vessel life, you know? It's not being able to recite this, that, and the other, or, you know, being the trendy one in the community and all that kind of stuff. Otherwise, you become part of a cult. You become like this insular bubble, don't you? Whereas if you're living outwardly and expressing that love to other people, be it completely flawed as a human being as well, right? That's where the magic is. That's where life is, you know?
Yeah, it's so true. Like, you just said something right now, and even this morning, when I come home, I had a whinge to my partner about something, and she said, "Hey, you're being negative. Come on." Like, and she knows, like, that I was like, at the time, it's like, oh, but I just needed to say that, and then reflected on it. I was like, yeah, she was right. Yeah, I needed to hear that. I needed to snap out of that little bubble. Hey, that's coming from a place of love. That's not coming from a place of trying to put me down. Yeah. But you need to be able to recognize the difference between that. So, hey, I'm human just like everyone else. I'm no better. I'm side by side with everyone else. We're working project every day. And I appreciated her saying it. Didn't appreciate it in the moment, but when I sat with her, I was like, yeah, appreciate that. Thank you, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I'll share something as well then. I was talking to... a colleague of mine earlier this week, and she goes, she was talking about, so we work in, I'll be too long to explain it, but we help people with mental health issues trying to move forward. And I'm way more of a coach than I am a therapist, but I work alongside qualified psychotherapists and stuff like that. Anyway, so she goes, this guy, you know, he was going through this trouble and he didn't eat very well and, you know, he didn't have a place to sleep, et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of shared a little bit about my journey in the last couple of years. I was, you know, I didn't have anywhere to sleep. So I was sleeping on a sofa for a while. I was living on one meal a day, that kind of stuff. Wow. So I just told her, yeah, you know, I was doing this, da da da, and I'm out of it now. But like, it was a tough time. And she goes, you didn't say anything. And I was like, yeah. And she goes, promise me if you ever get into that situation again, you'll reach out.
Yeah.
And I said, no. And she was like, why not? And then I said, I don't know. I find that really difficult. That's some work that I need to do internally about value and all sorts of stuff. And she goes to me, you're not more special than everyone else, you know. And it hit me. Yeah. I was like, oh man, that is a level of pride though, isn't it? That's a level of, you think you're being humble and you don't want to bother anyone, but actually you're there's a pride thing there. And I was like, wow, I really need to work through that. Yeah.
Yes. It's so true. Like I literally say to everyone who jumps on a clarity call me or jumps on as a client, I'm like, you know what? You've taken so much courage to reach out to me right now. Especially like the men, the ones, you know, the big alpha guys. Like I go, you got some big balls today doing this. Like, cause I take my hat off, because the biggest part of this was what you just did was click that button to submit, to jump on this call or to accept. So that takes more courage than you think. Now the journey you're going to be on today moving forward is going to be amazing, because you've decided to change, decided to work. And I think that, you know, I have a coach. I have someone, because how can I tell someone that you need coaching if I can't have coaching? Mm. I have someone that calls me out my BS. I have someone that goes, hey, you're coasting right now. You're walking when you should be running.
Mm.
You're going backwards. And we need that in our life.
Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah, for sure.
We need to be held accountable.
I remember like when I was going through the height of my anxiety, all the anxiety that I was experiencing, I have to keep reframing the way I say that, because it wasn't my anxiety. It was something that I experienced, right?
Yeah.
And then the panic attacks and stuff like that. And I remember looking back and there were some beautiful people in my life. Right, you know, helping me out, driving me to like exams because I was at uni and stuff, like amazing, beautiful people. But the ones that really stood out to me are the ones that kicked my butt, man. They're like proper kicked my butt. And I just like, yeah, man, I needed that. You know, it's like when you're drowning, you know, someone can kind of like throw you some floats and stuff, help you out. But then sometimes you just need someone to go, dude, you can swim. Come on. Come on. Yeah. And you go, oh, yeah, I can swim. All right. Yeah. Thank you. I didn't like that in the moment, like you were saying earlier on. But I needed that. I needed that wake up call, you know?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, you need to have like three types of friends. One that will chuck his arm over your shoulder when you need it. One that, you know, is pushing you, come on. And then you have, and like thinks you better of you, that you can do better than this. And then one that's willing to walk away if they see you doing going down a path that's not you. And that don't mean that they hate you, but it means that I'll be waiting for you when you're ready to come back home, in the mentality of come back into this is the path you're meant to be on, not down that path. I think we all need those friends in our life that call us out, you know, walk away or put an arm under the shoulder. And it's understanding how you react to it and what you need. And that's where communication comes in though.
Yeah.
Friends, partners, what makes you tick. We're all beautiful, weird human beings.
Yeah. And I don't know, I haven't traveled enough to know this, but like, I think the UK, generally speaking, has got this, you know, we've got the dry humor, we've got the self-deprecation, we've got all of that stuff, which has its, you know, it's got its flaws. But there is something about, and I'm thinking again, back in the day where you could go to the pub, your mates would take the mickey out of you, you know, they'd, you know, wind you up and all the rest of it. But it's their way of showing love. It's their way of going, you're one of us, man. I know you're going through a hard time, but we're going to take the mickey out of you so that you know that, you know, we see you as an equal. We don't see you as like less than us or above.
Yeah.
And I think there's some magic around that as well. So you're talking about communication, and it's kind of like understanding the communication of the culture that you're in as well.
Yeah. Humor heals, right? That's a great thing. Yes. Humor heals. And I think if I know for a fact that my rugby friends, how I communicate to them is far different how I communicate to people I work in business with, or my clients, or my partner, or my school friends. We all have different ways. And it's understanding, like if they're taking the mickey out of me, that's a sign that they love me and I'm a part of that area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay. It's the ones that react to it and get the backside up a bit and bite back, you're in a you're in a vicious circle now, because they're going to keep coming at you, and if you keep biting, you're losing. But it's understanding that demographic. I actually found that in Australia, they're very much a confident country. Okay. Very much positive. They're very much, or not always positive, but I mean, very much like, we can do this, instead of like, oh, nah, we can't do that. Now we'll give this a go, and if it don't work out, we'll try again. I love that mentality about the Aussies. I do find that, someone said it to me a couple of weeks ago, do you find the UK a bit more negative? I do feel sometimes we complain about things we don't need to be complaining about, but that's a generational thing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I got a friend. Well, I say a friend. He was a mentor to me. He's in Australia now. So Neil, if you're watching, shout out to you. I think I might mention him a few times on my podcast. But yeah, again, he just came in with that can-do attitude, and I'm like, "Who's this weirdo, man? What's this about?
Yeah,
you know, come on, that's weird, man. Come on now, are you going to hug me now?" And absolutely, yeah, we did. I love his hugs now. But yeah, it's just that kind of. Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, that confidence that like you, let's go again. Whereas I think, not that this is therapy for me now, but like I was at Top Golf like a couple of years ago playing Top Golf, and I had a few guys around me that I don't normally go with, and they were like, yeah, you got this, man, you can do this. And I really struggled. And then I had one guy who understood me, and he's like, mate, you ain't going to make that shot. There's no chance.
That's what you needed.
And that's what I needed. And I smashed it. And I was like, wow, it's understanding, not whether it's right or wrong, but understanding your conditioning and what triggers you and what gets you to a place of success. And maybe doing some NLP to, underpin some of that. But also just to go, okay, it's that assessment thing again, isn't it? To where am I at? What works for me?
It's that. And it's like, it might be down to like a bit of patronize. You think, oh, they patronizing me by saying, come on, you got this. Generally, they're like, you got this, babe, come on. You know, where the UK humor is take the mic, but we actually show love that way, you know? And it's a funny thing, but it's just way wired, and it's accepting some parts of that as well.
Totally. I have to ask you this question. I know we're going to wrap up soon, but what does courage, the word courage, if you've really thought about it, what does courage mean to you, Ollie?
Courage means to me is leaning into discomfort, leaning into fear. You might have been burnt once, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't go back into the fire. If I could weigh that up. I always see life as a table. Let's just say it this way. You have two chairs on the left, two chairs on the right, and you're the head of the table. You have happy confidence on one side. You have fear, sadness on the side. And you're in the middle and throughout stages of your life, and you do things extremely well. Life happens to you, like you might win an award. Happy comes up. You might get into some daily structure. You might go to the gym 3 or 4 or 5 times a week. Confidence starts to come up. You might have a relationship breakup. Sad comes to the table, but it goes back down. You might have a job that didn't work out well for you. Fear comes to the top. And then after times throughout life, we have negative experiences happening to us all the time. But after a while, fear will start to come to the head of the table and he puts you down on the side. And fear will stay there if you let it. And fear will go, right, I'm going to put you in a box. And if I keep you in this box, I'm keeping you safe. But when you live in that life, it's no meaning. It's no drive. There's no like purpose. You're living in comfort and an unrealistic comfort that's not cool. So courage is recognizing that you've got to put fear back to the side of your table, and you need to be the head of your table in order to live with meaning again. And that's fear, leaning in with courage.
Oh, what a great analogy. Yeah, not heard it put like that before. That's really good. Yeah, and it really helps, doesn't it? Because we're a visual species, aren't we? So if we can see a picture of what's going on, it helps us to kind of, again, I'm using the word assessment a lot today, but it kind of helps us to assess, you know, what's going on in front of us in any given moment, right? And even that's a muscle, right? That's a muscle that you want to keep building. Like, no one gets it right. I picked a decision based on fear. I picked a decision. Oh, I picked one based on courage. Now I'm courageous. Well, actually, no. Like, it's got to be something that keeps on going over and over and over again.
Massively, man. It's literally repetition.
And that actually does bring comfort, doesn't it?
Yeah. You get to that level, you break that box, you grow. And then you do that for a while, that becomes your comfort area. And then you're like, okay, what's next? How do I get to that next area? And that's a part of a meaning to every person, in particular, like men. Men need meaning. Men need purpose. And that's in discomfort. And that's courage. That's fear.
Yeah, agreed. And when I was sort of thinking about a name for the podcast, and it was named before there was a podcast, but the Courage Journal, the Courage Podcast, all that kind of stuff, I was like, you know what, it's more than that though. It's like, it's, you have to go, you have to go, right? You got to move forward. And I think that's something that, you know, we can sit, we can do all the, and I think it's really helpful, sit, reflect, journal, have the conversations, go to the seminars, do the workshops, have a coach, all the stuff, but you got to action, right? You got to action, you got to move forward, whatever that looks like, whether it's a tiny move or a huge move forward, that's where all the magic is, you know?
100%. Like, mate, you starting a podcast, me, you know, you're going in on courage there.
Mm.
You're putting yourself in a vulnerable state that potentially people can listen to you and hear your vulnerable aspects, the pros, the cons. And you put that out there to the world to listen to if they want to. You put yourself out there. That is so much courage in that. That is unbelievable, you know, and that's where real growth is. And I honor anyone that's comfortable to do that with the mission of wanting to better other people as well on the way. That's, hey, take my hat off.
Thanks, man. And I think, you know, it was a big step for me, if I'm honest. Like, I had to do quite a lot of work to be on this side of the camera because I was so used to being on the other side.
Yeah.
Now I don't care. Like, honestly, I just care about the person I'm talking to. I'm like, I want to know about what you have to. I mean, I put a couple of plants out, a couple of lights, you know, make it look nice, whatever.
Love that.
But like, I want to talk to you. I want to know what can I, and selfishly speaking, like I want, sorry, not selfishly speaking, I want people to listen to this. And I want people to hopefully connect with you, connect with me, or just have a spark that they go off and do something amazing. That's the goal, right? But selfishly speaking, I've got curious minds. So I want to know, Ollie, man, what's your life story, man? Tell me, I want to know, I want to learn something from you. I want to take it away, man. I want to go and apply it, you know, that kind of stuff. And I think when you, again, know what it is that you're trying to build or achieve or gain from, then all of this outside noise just starts to dial down. Oh, I didn't comb my hair properly, which I often don't when I'm on the podcast. Or I didn't wear the right clothes or what. I don't care, man. Like, let's have a chat, you know.
Definitely, man. It's the biggest one. And I love it, man. And like I said, anyone who's doing it or putting themselves out there, even if it's speaking on camera on an Instagram reel or TikTok or Facebook or, you know, there's so much growth in that. So many people, like you just said, have the books, the podcasts, the seminars, but they have more knowledge than me. I know I'm definitely not the best at what I do. There's so many people out there better than me. And there's so many people who are doing it, not doing it, that are better than me, but they don't have one thing that I have. I have the drive, the energy, and the impact. I know I'm willing to put myself into uncomfortable areas where people with all the knowledge are fearful of being rejected. I've been rejected my whole life by things. I'm used to this. Mm. This is part of the journey. And I get back up every time, and that's my thought pattern of how I've created a business which is successful and it's impacting hundreds of people.
Love it. Love it. Well, on that note, if people are listening to this, watching this, wherever they're consuming this content, where can they get hold of you? How can they access what you have to offer? Could you give us a little bit of a bit of insight into that?
Yeah, so I'm just looking now at my phone while I do it. So I'm trying to find out my Instagram handle. So it's Ollie_Olds1 on Instagram. I have my own website as well, OllieOldsCoaching.com. But the biggest thing is booking in a call with me if you ever wanted to level up your mindset, upgrade your life, your business, your relationships, your health, all of those areas. Probably that's the main areas of doing that. Or just reaching out on this podcast here. But I'm more content of just speaking, connecting with someone amazing like you, man.
Oh, bless you, man. You. It's vice versa. I feel the same way. when your stuff came up, I was like, oh man, I like this guy. Looking at your stuff, and I was like, I'm just gonna give it a shot, man. Well, the worst you could say is no, I don't want to come on your podcast. I was like, hey man, Ollie, come, let's have a chat, you know.
I appreciate it, man.
That's so good. Yeah, so if you are listening to this and you want to reach out to Ollie, please do. You can jump in the comments, you can send me a DM, I'll forward it across. I would say if you want to connect with Ollie, the number one thing you can do is get over your shyness, get over your like, oh, is he gonna bite me off? Bite my hand, is he gonna do, you know, just give him a shout, just DM him, message him, and like you said, book a call, see if there's an alignment, see if there's something you can work with, because I think chemistry is important, you know. There's no two ways, you know, there's other people in the field, but actually if you gel well with Ollie, give him a shout. So that's me plugging you a little bit. Ollie, I want to send you a copy of the Courage Journal, so I'll arrange for that to happen. Check it out. I'd love to get your feedback.
Yeah, man.
And I'll definitely get a copy of yours as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'll send mine over to you. I'll get your address and we'll get it sent over.
Well, I wasn't trying to get a free copy there. I would have bought one. But
no, not at all, man. You can definitely have one. And yeah, I'm all about it. I love it.
Fantastic. Ollie, do you have a podcast?
I do. It's called Walkers Only Podcast.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, Walkers Only Podcast. So it started in 2020. And the theme was don't talk it, walk it. So yeah, and that's stemmed from the community. So I have a community now in Wales where sea dips every Friday morning, run club Thursdays, and then we do like men's days, women's days, but that's all the free aspect of the community, and then the coaching is my job. And yeah, but the podcast has got some amazing guests on there.
Amazing. So, yeah. Cool. I didn't even know you had a podcast until like really recently. So I was like, oh, I've got to give you a chance to talk about that. What I'll do though, again, if you're listening to this on YouTube, all the links in the description. So yeah, just easily, you know, subscribe, do all the stuff you have to do, get in the links, get in touch with Ollie. Fantastic. All right. I have so many more questions to ask you, but we've run out of time. So you'll have to come back. Okay, Ollie.
Please, man. I love that, really. Yeah, for sure.
And if when you're next doing your sea dip, just remember I'm having a hot shower somewhere.
You're in the hot shower.
I'm doing something else. I'll get there one day.
Legend.
All right. Thanks again, Ollie. Listen, all the best, man, with whatever you're building. And yeah, I'm cheering you on from not too far away, man. We're only a couple of hours away from each other. We'll grab a burger or something. It'd be good.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Excellent. So if you're listening to this from home, you're watching online, our message to you today is to keep moving forward and to go in courage. See you on the next episode.
Hey, really hope you enjoyed that episode. And I hope there was something there that you can take away and reflect on. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can do so publicly on YouTube via the comments. Or if you prefer to be more private, you can DM me on Instagram and the handle is @goencourage. You can also find links to everything at the website, which is www.goencourage.com. You can find a copy of the Courage Journal, links to TikTok, Instagram, and all the places that you can find Go Encourage online. You can also have a look at the upcoming Go Encourage blog, which is coming soon. So yeah, definitely do check that out. But my encouragement to you is whatever you're doing, whatever you're going through, keep moving forward and to Go Encourage. I'll see you on the next episode.